Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Recovery Radio broadcast recorded live at the Latah Recovery Community Center in downtown Moscow. At the LRCC, we work with people to enter and engage in recovery from addictions and behavioral health disorders through peer-to-peer interaction, evidence-based practices to promote a healthy community. Recovery Radio is an outreach of the Latah Recovery Community Center, which is located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community information about addiction and behavioral health disorders and to make our community aware of the recovery resources available from the Latah Recovery Community Center. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for those struggling with addiction and behavioral health disorders. And let's see, we'll run over the July calendar now that we're into the month. Recovery coaching and peer support is every day and by appointment. You can do that on phone or call and get scheduled a time. Alcoholics Anonymous, live and on Zoom, is every day at noon. Peer activity, Moscow Transit Bus Tour, is going to be Monday, July 11th at 11:54, and we'll be meeting at Friendship Square. Positive Affirmations, live and on Zoom, is Monday from 1 to 2. AA Monday Men's Meeting is Monday from 5:30 to 6:30. AA Women's Meeting, live at St. Mark's Episcopal Church and on Zoom through our website, is Mondays at 7:30. The Recovery Peer Volunteer Meeting is the last Monday of every month at 6. Sexaholics Anonymous, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursdays from 8:30 to 9:30. Vandal Recovery at the Center, formerly known as the Campus Christian Center on the U of I campus, is Tuesdays and Thursdays from 2 to 4 p.m. The Grief Group meets the first and third Tuesday of the month at 5:30. The LRC board meeting will be on Tuesday, July 12th at 3:45, and the public is welcome to attend. Vandal Recovery, University Rec Programs at Campus Christian Center, is Tuesdays and Thursdays from 2 to 4. AA and Potlatch at the Catholic Church, 725 Spruce Street, is Tuesdays at 6:30. Harm Reduction and Safe Syringe Exchange with Supplies is Tuesdays and Thursdays from 4 to 7 or by appointment. The Events Committee meets Wednesdays at 2. New Volunteer Orientation is Wednesdays from 4 to 5. Recovery International, Mental Health, Self-Help, live and on Zoom is Wednesdays at 6:30. North Idaho AIDS Coalition free Hep C and HIV testing will be on Thursday, July 21st from 12 to 2, and that is a requirement to become part of the harm reduction program. Movie and game night, Thursdays from 5 to 8. Vandal Recovery Planning Meeting is Fridays at 3. All Recovery Meeting, live and on Zoom, is Fridays from 5 to 5:45. And again, Al-Anon, live and on Zoom, is Fridays at 8. Alcoholics Anonymous Sunday Morning Group meets at the Campus Christian Center and also is available on Zoom at Sundays at 9:30. Our Zoom meetings are accessed by going to our calendar at latahrecoverycenter.org and clicking on the group name. You can follow the instructions from there. If you have a problem with that, give us a call at 208-883-1045, and we'll help you navigate the Zoom universe. And kind of a special announcement here, we're getting close to opening up the Oxford House here in Moscow, and I'm going to read a little bit from the flyer. The Moscow Oxford House, a clean and sober house for men, housed in a beautiful home and neighborhood. The Moscow Oxford House is democratically run, self-supporting, and drug and alcohol free. The house will accommodate 7 men and features a peaceful backyard, great living spaces, two bathrooms, and a laundry. The rent per person is going to be $500 per month plus a $100 move-in fee. All household expenses, utilities, cable and internet included. Food and toiletries are excluded. And for an interview to move into that house, contact Sean MacArthur at 208-501-3138 or Mike Reninger at 208-503-2334. And if you want more information on this, give us a call down here at the Recovery Center, 883-1045, and one of the volunteers can give you more information on that. Okay, now on to today's show. Now that all the busy work is out of the way, I am really happy to have in the studio with me today, Shane. Welcome, Shane. It's good to have you here.
Thanks.
And I met Shane just literally yesterday. He's been doing some volunteer work here at the Recovery Center, and we got chatting a little bit, and I found he had a pretty interesting recovery story. So he was gracious enough to drop everything and come in today and tell his story. So let's kick it off, Shane. I just have you tell a little bit about your history and how you wound up in Moscow or the area, and then we'll go on and hear your story of experience, strength, and hope for recovery.
All right. Well, to start, some may know me better by Diz. I'm actually a local here, have been, was born in Coeur d'Alene, but raised in Moscow my whole life. Went to school all 12 years, well, all 13 if you include kindergarten here in Moscow, and actually graduated from here. Played semi-professional football here with the Palouse Thunder for over eight years, almost 9 years. And yeah, I just been a local here. Graduated from Northwest Indian College down in Kamiai, actually out of Bellingham, Washington, but I was on the Kamiai site. We'll get into how I got down there later. But yeah, just a local from here and born and raised. So I was very interested to be a part of this radio program and, get the opportunity to tell my story.
Great, great. And your story. I'll let you kick it off with, like we say, what it was like, what happened to change your world, turn it upside down, and what it's like now.
All right, well, I'll give you a brief history, I guess. My mother had me with a Native American from the Nez Perce Reservation. I'm actually enrolled Cayuse, which is out of the CTUIR Reservation, Confederated Tribes, the Umatilla Indian Reservation. I wasn't enrolled until 25. She was actually a single mother with me for 6 years. My grandfather, Jerry Dean, and my grandmother, Alice, helped raise me and all my aunts and uncles, cousins, because my mom actually worked here at the University of Idaho for Upward Bound. She was there full time and, raising a son and having a full time career and working for the university is difficult, but we had that family atmosphere that was very good.
You got to have family to pull something like that off. It's tough.
Heck yeah. So, in that, through that childhood, there was drinking and smoking cigarettes and everything like there was in the 80s. That was normal. A lot of my family ended up into a little bit harsher addiction. My mother not included, my grandfather not included, thankfully. I had a lot of aunts and uncles that drifted off into addiction, whether that be alcoholism or methamphetamines. So it was around. There was addiction definitely in the family as I grew. My dad actually married my mom when I was six. His name is Phil Fleener. He runs Phil Fleener Logging here in the area. I actually logged with him for 10 and a half years after I turned 18. Great man. He's actually a lot of the reason I am who I am today. But, when he came into our life, there was turmoil because of the logging industry. You had the ups and downs. I don't know if you know, but there's a lot of seasonal is a lot of is difficult. All the family, it can be, you know.
Sure, you go like crazy in the summer and you don't see your family, and then in the winter you're all locked in together, and
it's
a very different dynamic.
Right. Oh, of course. Well, and in that, you know, you end up considered low income, even though we were a well off family. We actually ended up losing our company in 94. There was a very bad flood in 94, 95 that happened in the area on the St. Joe. And that was right in my age of, I guess would be adolescence, but most malleable age. You know, mm-hmm. I was getting into being a teenager, getting ready to go into eighth grade, and we lost our house and everything and ended up in an apartment. So big change in life, you know. So that also put me in town and put a lot more strain on my parents and a lot less watch, a lot less understanding, or a lot less, let's say, what's a good word for it? A lot less
supervision.
Supervision, yeah. Like, well, and it wasn't that they didn't care. It's just that they had so much going on, I was able to slip through the cracks. Right. I was a brat. And I went and I was in a hurry to experience life. So I started drinking at a young age, smoking at a young age, partying at a young age. And that was just something I was excited to be involved in. I did not think at that time, obviously at a young age, you're not thinking anything about alcoholism or addiction. That wasn't my worry.
You're just partying, just having a good time.
Yeah, I was experimenting and having a great time. I was actually playing football, I played three sports here for Moscow. And so, I mean, it was something that I kind of was a hidden thing. I was definitely partying with older folks and not kids in my school to kind of keep a distance between the two lives. Yeah, sure. Yeah, definitely. So it was easy for me to fall into bad practices. And then they got worse as I got older. I actually ended up having a kid at 20 years old with a gal from the area as well. His name was Kellen. He actually lived for 15 months and then passed because of an accident. And that drove me into a dark place, which really, I think, kind of brought my alcoholism to a pinnacle. I was drinking hard liquor bad. I was drinking like two-fifths a night. I was drinking Captain Morgan's and Jaeger, and my friends know this. It was a horrible addiction. I was bad to the point where I should have been, you know, hospitalized in most cases, but it was a normal night for me. I would drink that way, and then that way I could afford to go to the bar and sit with my friends and just drink beer. It got bad, you know, and I was dark. It was a time where I didn't think I had a problem. I just felt like I was coping, and I felt like that was a way to cope because I had seen that in my family.
Yeah, you drink like me too if you had the problems I have. Yeah,
right, right. Sure. Well, I had seen it, you know, as a coping mechanism growing up, that was how things were handled, you know. So I, not anything against my family or anything. That was just the observation that I had made. Mm-hmm. So.
Sure, I grew up in an alcoholic household. Right. So, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It's like, well, the adults, you know, are doing this, and they seem happy and jovial most of the time, you know. Right. So maybe this is just what you do.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I dove deep, and then in that time, or during that time, I ended up stopping playing football, stopping all the positive things in my life. I was doing music and just abruptly it stopped. There was always something I did, you know, another hidden thing that I always kept for myself, and was just starting to get involved and starting to perform around in the area, and lost my son. So I completely stopped doing music, stopped doing football, stopped doing everything that I loved, and basically changed my life. Met another woman, a very wild woman. I was in my wild stage and she was wild, and that was what I was looking for. We actually ended up having two children, my 11-year-old Micah and our youngest son Martin. And we actually lost our youngest son Martin to SIDS after 6 weeks. So I was 25 at that point. So deep into addiction, and at 25 lost my second son. For me, it was like, okay, I've done this before. I've handled this before. I had a lot of guilt because of him, because it was also my last season of football. I was concentrated on football, lost a lot of time with him. So during that guilt was also a catalyst to me getting darker, you know, because it was something that later on I ended up putting more into that alcoholism. But what ended up happening was we moved back to where her family was from, which is actually our reservation. I ended up in Kuski and Kamiai, which for me was great. Mm-hmm. It was actually probably where I would begin to say the turning point was, at least in my education and understanding. Mm-hmm. Because at that point, I started to learn what I was going through and what I was doing and what I really was. Unfortunately, during that time, it actually caused my ex-wife to go manic. She ended up in a facility. She ended up with schizophrenia. And I was told to move on. There was nothing there medically that could be done. I ended up divorced and a single father. And on the reservation. So this is something that I never thought would happen.
No one wakes up in the morning and says, you know, I think I'm going to become an alcoholic single father.
Right.
Yeah. No, right. That's not a thing.
Right. Well, and then realization hit, you know, because my mom was a single mother and had done so amazing, at least in my eyes, with me, providing for me, doing the right things for me, at least giving me the opportunity, even though I had made the wrong decisions, she had given me the right, you know, that right foundation. So I looked at what I was providing and what I was providing for that foundation and realized, you know, wow, this isn't what I want to do. You know, this person, this alcoholic that I realized and had finally come to grips with that I was, that was not who I wanted to be. So from there, it was a journey. Being on the reservation helped a lot because I was surrounded by family, surrounded by love, and we were able to do a lot of healing in traditional ways. I was able to hunt and fish and be involved in plenty of things that were healing. Sweat, just being involved in everything. And then I went to school, got a degree there at Northwest Indian College. And in that time, during the school, that year, I had a 2-year degree that I did in 16 months. But during that 16 months, I was able to realize, okay, dude, you're an alcoholic. You know, like this is serious stuff. It's time to figure it out one way or another. I didn't quit drinking at that point. Hadn't quit drinking. I actually met a gentleman down there who was running a radio station similar to this. It was the KIYE radio station down there in Kamiai. And they brought me in, showed me their equipment, and cut me loose. And for the first time, I went back to music. And it was actually the release that I needed at that time to handle the grief that I wasn't dealing with, to handle the addiction that I wasn't dealing with, to handle the turmoil in my life. Everything that I wasn't dealing with all came out in my first album. So they let me do that and just let me go wild. And that helped. But it also made me realize I needed to change, more change, more change, more change, grow. So I left the reservation with a bag of clothes and my son. I actually talk about this in my music a little bit, but I left the reservation with a bag of clothes and my son. And we went to the Silver Valley, which is actually where my mom was raised, Kellogg, Idaho. And I was up there visiting her cousin's kids. Mm-hmm. And met a wonderful woman. And I remember looking up in the sky and being like, man, how can you put this woman in my life now? Like in the position I'm at, in the piece of crap that I felt that I was, how can you put her in my life, you know? Which I knew instantly, like this woman, you know, she could be the everything that I, you know, have been looking for in my whole life, which I wasn't looking for, which was funny. Right. You know, it's not what I went looking for. I just left looking for an opportunity to leave, you know, and have a moment away from real life. So took a moment from real life and found real life. So she was just a wonderful woman. And it took a couple, she likes to call them Shanecations. I would leave. And once I went back to the reservation and I just went wild burning bridges. I had a lot of connections from my past that I didn't want to take into my future in order for me to be healthy. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I dealt with them in the right way or dealt with all of it in any way in the right way, but I handled it and moved forward. I remember looking at my best friend, Stevie. I'm not going to say his last name. We'll call him Squirrel. There, now you know who he is. Okay. But I remember looking at him and telling him I was going to quit drinking. And he was like, no, no way, man, no. No, no way it could happen. So I was like, yeah, dude, I'm going to quit drinking. And I'm going to marry that girl. And he laughed, you know. Okay, whatever, man. Because I've said similar things to him before and nothing had ever come of it. So I drank and drank and drank, and we drank that night hard. I drank 44 beers that night. It's my favorite part of the story. Yeah. And at midnight, I looked at him, and I drank that last beer, and I put it down. The next day, she came and picked me up, and 44 days later, we were married on 4-4. So it was that was the rest of my turning point. That was like I had already made the decision, and that was when I jumped. You know, I was like, this is it. No more addiction. There's got to be a change. Now, the reason for the change was because I wanted to break the cycle. I had a cycle in my family that I had noticed that I had just no care for. What was called pure hatred for. And I blamed it all on addiction. You know, this cycle of our family losing things and just being put in the situations we were. It was something that I did not want my kids to have to go through. My parents didn't put me through it, and I didn't want my kids to have to go through. So I figured the only way for me to fix that was to get rid of addiction. You know, that was a reality that had set in. So that attested to a lot of, you know, the burning bridges and everything else was I felt like I couldn't go forward without addiction if I still had those connections or still had those ties.
You gotta change your, I heard it said, you gotta change your sandbox and you gotta change your playmates.
Right. Exactly. So I'm gonna change the whole game. I literally did. So I left, married this wonderful woman, and she pushed me to be great in every facet and still does all the time. So I went back to music hard, traveled, started a record label, started a magazine, an 8V hip hop magazine, started as a .com, turned into a magazine, man, started everything, started just all these positive things again, which is, you know, that's growth, right? You know,
yeah, absolutely.
To be able to fill your cup so much that you're spilling into others. And that's what I was doing. I was growing. I was able to reach out and positively heal as many people as I could at the time. So in that time, we were living in the Silver Valley, and my grandpa got sick again. He was kind of a sickly dude, but he is always a warrior. Mm-hmm. He's actually my namesake. He was named Diz first. So I came down to my hometown. You know, of course, we're coming home, right? There's nothing wrong with home. Came home and just wanted to be here for my kids to be here and be around while he was still here. I did it just in time. He passed quickly, unfortunately, you know. But that loss hit deep and hit hard again. But I didn't turn to addiction. I turned to family and the practices that I knew that were positive, you know. Mm-hmm. So for the first time, I was able to handle this right, I guess, if you would say.
Or at least in a healthy way.
Yeah, in a healthy way. I didn't see it as a catalyst for anything dark because he was a very positive and always positive and always about growth and being my best, you know, mm-hmm. just like my mother. Shortly thereafter, we lost my dad's mom, Joyce. You know, it was kind of a, you know, realization moment, like, oh my gosh, these matriarchs and patriarchs are leaving, you know?
Sure.
I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm glad I'm here. You know, so my kids got to meet them all and see them all, you know, so... but at the same time, I started to realize that my kids were going through loss, you know, so I started focusing on talking with them and making sure they were healing correctly. And none of them turned into problems. My oldest, we're still working on him. Love you, Roman. But he's been through as much, if not more, loss than me. He actually lost his mother at 13. He's a wild one. I got him when he was 16 or 17, and he just fell in love with the family, and we kept him. So he's always been my son, and he's my oldest. But he's been there through all the loss, you know, through the loss of both the boys mm-hmm. and through the loss of Papa. And he was close with Papa. And then out of nowhere, my mom gets sick, tells me one day, well, I got cancer. They don't know what it is yet, but I'm going to go to Vegas because I planned this trip. I said, well, hell yeah, Mom, go to Vegas. My mom had always told us since kids, if she got a particular type of cancer, if she got pancreatic cancer, that she would invite it because it was dark and she'd seen it done before with her friend's dad. So she came home and told us, in a short explanation, came home and told us that she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and it was metastasized and there was nothing they could do. And she wasn't going to fight it. She didn't want to take any medicines to slow anything down. So 5 weeks later, Mom's gone.
Wow.
Yeah, it was quick, but it's what she wanted. And it was positive. She got to talk to everybody. She got to have time with everybody. She did everything she wanted. So, again, loss, right?
Yeah.
Here we are, right back in that circle. So I made sure to, you know, talk to my kids and still focus on myself, keep myself out of the dark. So my wife's been a big part of that. Thank God. She's there, you know, because without her, I don't know that I'd be able to handle all that. But my family has definitely been the foundation in my recovery.
Mm-hmm.
So for that to get rocked, you know, is it's a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a huge deal. And in and of this time, you find out, or I find out, that I've got AS, which is ankylosing spondylitis. It's a disability of the back spine that I've had my whole life. Played football with my whole life, you know.
Right.
Nobody found it my whole life. But so we find out about that, dealing with all this, and then all of the loss.
That's a big pile.
It's a big pile, right? And I think the best way I can explain that, or the biggest reason I can explain that I've been able to handle it, is because I'm not drinking.
Mm-hmm.
My recovery is the reason. You know, it's like a circle again. But right. My recovery is the reason that I've been able to handle all of that.
Right.
You know, I don't know that I could have mentally and physically and emotionally handled any of these events in life
mm-hmm.
being a drunk. You know what I mean?
Well, except by being more of a drunk.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I wouldn't have made it. You know what I mean? I just don't think so. I really don't. At some point, the alcohol takes, you know what I mean, a toll and takes over. I've seen it. I'm glad I took my step away when I did. I've seen friends at my age that, you know, their livers are gone mm-hmm. and they're, you know, I'm not even 40,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm not even 40 and I've got friends that are dying of illnesses and have died of all these other things.
I've been there. I mean, I had a good friend of mine basically die of overdose in my driveway at 27, Jim. Yeah. About 2 years ago, a good old drinking buddy of mine down in California died of cirrhosis.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, if you don't break out of it, I mean, it will kill you.
Oh, I see
that. It's just the way it works. I mean, you're pouring a toxin into your body in big quantities over a long period of time. What'd you think was going to happen?
Right.
Well, but it's amazing. You don't think about that.
A lot of people turn a blind eye.
Yeah.
And they do it in order to just further, you know, to continue, to continue to move on and to not have to change what they're comfortable with.
Right.
It's not comfortable to get sober. I'm going to be straight up honest. It is not comfortable to recover. It's not a glorious, wonderful, easy area. You wake up every day with sunshine and there's flowers and the birds are chirping. That's not what it is.
No.
I'm going to be real with you. You wake up every day and you battle.
Yeah.
And you handle things and you handle life and you handle emotions and you handle new stresses and you handle new battles or new events and you handle new struggles and new relationships, you know, because relationships change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, let's get into that. You know, the old relationships that you had with people are not the same
because they
had a relationship with an alcoholic. They're now in a relationship with the sober you, with the recovering you.
Mm-hmm.
So some people can't handle that, you know.
You lose
people. I lost dozens of friends that just were unable to handle the new me. Some I frustrated some. Some I just was too calm for. Some I, you know, some I was just too happy for. You know, whatever it may be. But
well, and if you're not there drinking with them, to validate their behavior,
right,
you're holding a mirror in front of them.
Right. And
nobody wants to look in that mirror when you're in addiction.
Right.
Because what you see is not beautiful.
Right. Well, and as a musician and as an entertainer, you know, I was known for throwing the big party and having the big blast and providing the booze and you know what I mean? Being that guy. And mm-hmm. And that guy wasn't there anymore, so it confused some folks.
Oh, yeah.
You know, instead I was having barbecues and providing burgers and hot dogs and cupcakes. And,
right.
You know, some people, that's a little different scene. And
yeah.
That's okay.
Not what they're used to,
yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah, that's okay. But I was able to have my kids at those events. That's one thing I've always strived to do, is just make things family-oriented. Because mm-hmm. when it comes to music, I don't feel like it should be, you know, music's not age-related and shouldn't be. So if you can't bring your kids to the concert, is it really fun? You know what I mean? Is it really worth it? Did you really have the experience?
You know what? Speaking of music, I think we're going to take a little break right now, and we're going to listen to some of your music.
All right. Well, we can do that.
So we'll do that. We'll be right back. You're listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3, the coolest station in the nation.
I just wish that you could see inside my head, what I'm going through, all the tightness in my chest. I'm so alone, can they all tell? Should I just go home, or maybe I'll just, yeah. Do I even measure up? Could I even fit the bill? Could I just calm down or take another one of these pills? This pushed me to do things that I would never do. Panic is my mind and manic becomes my mood. Anxiety, standing locked in my thoughts in the middle of the room. Feeling so lost, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Oh. Anxiety, spinning, standing still. Somebody catch me, I'm about to crash into the wall of the couch. I'm running from my past, frenemies and the memories. In case of emergency, you can just kiss my ass. Anxiety, standing in the middle of the room. Feeling so lost, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Just like I told you before, I'm confused, so confused. Anxiety, spinning, standing still. Someone catch me, I'm gonna crash into the wall of the couch. I'm just running from my past, frenemies and these memories. In case of emergency, just tell them they can kiss my ass. The anxiety.
And hey, welcome back. You're listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 in Moscow and Pullman. And I'm Radio Johnny, and I am in the studio/conference room today with Shane, and he's been sharing his story of addiction and recovery. And Shane, we were talking during the break. Love the music, by the way.
Thanks.
We're talking about, you are an indigenous person, a native person, and you worked your recovery in part through traditional native healing methods. And I'd love to have you share that with the audience, what that looked like, what you went through, how it made you feel, those sort of things.
Right.
So I'll throw it in your lap there and share with us what you can.
All right. Well, I mean, as much as I'd love to get into detail about, you know, all of the history of it, I don't think that's the reason. I don't think that really is, I don't think that has all of the energy is definitely from the history, don't get me wrong. But I think that healing is there for everyone, and doesn't matter where you come from. That healing that I went through was there and available from me, or for me, because of the elders and because of our traditions. But it's similar to healing, like you were talking about, similar to healing that that is done in AA. You guys have a 12-step program, and in those 12 steps, all of them talk about we, and it's all a family thing and all of a group thing in the process. So mm-hmm. I think that is definitely what is done in healing tribally, you know, no matter where you are. Definitely here on the Nez Perce Reservation, and, you know, with the Nimiipuu and with the Sahaptin people, that is definitely a big thing, you know, healing and keeping people positive and growing and going in, you know, in a positive direction. That ancient healing has been used for a lot of different things, you know, whether it be sickness, addiction now, because addiction really wasn't a thing prior to it being introduced. But mm-hmm. now it is definitely a healing for addiction. It's been a healing for loss. It's a healing for everything. That's why we go there. We go to the, you know, we go to the sweat lodge, and we go to him to heal. I think that the same energies are behind the reasons that people go to recovery, mm-hmm. right? You go to AA because you need a group. You need to feel included. You need that camaraderie. You need the acceptance in order to step forward. Sometimes,
right. And you need that spiritual element,
right,
as well.
Right. All right. Exactly. You know, and you can't, I don't think you can really have a spiritual element individually, you know, cause you can't, I think it's an expressed thing and a discussed, energy and an energy that's shared. So I don't really feel like you can have a spiritual energy individually. So I think, you know, when you come to that group, that's something you're looking for as a basis, you know, foundationally, as you're looking for that spiritual connection. Mm-hmm. We find that in people, you know, and you can find that in individuals and their spirituality and what they're sharing. So really that's the similarities I see between the two, you know, there's that you go for the healing and for the connection and for the group, and the learning. Cause I think that really recovery has a lot to do with learning, and whether that be learning new practices, learning change, learning, you know, what was wrong, learning how to deal with things. But it's just learning, and that growth and that knowledge is shared from a group, you know what I mean? A group mm-hmm. that's already experienced that. So just like you would do in any other facet and look for mm-hmm. a mentor, this is just an easier way for addiction or for somebody that's dealing with addiction and wants to recover. It's a lot easier for you to recover when you have 30 people that have that knowledge instead of trying to deal with it in yourself in the mirror and tell yourself about what you've gone through.
Absolutely. I mean, we talk about AA being a spiritual program of action, but when I came into AA, I had no idea how to live sober. I mean, I'd been living, you know, as a drunk for many years. And, you know, like your story, the wheels didn't come off all at once. You know, right. It was a slow building process to get there. Well, over those years and years and few decades, I hadn't grown spiritually I hadn't certainly hadn't matured. I was still behaving like a 16-year-old,
right.
You know, and to be able to get into a group of people, A, that I could relate to, right? Because we have this shared experience, this addiction. We also have, you know, the shared experience of the community where I got sober. I mean, I grew up in a suburb of the San Francisco Bay Area, and, you know, everybody was kind of middle or upper middle class, and they all had the same kind of problems I did.
Right.
You know, we weren't in a situation where we were in a depressed area, like, you know, sometimes reservation life can be like that, right?
Right, of course.
And, but to be able to be with people, not only that looked like me, but had the same cultural background as I did, you know, certainly made it easier for me to relate to them and to listen and believe them when they shared things with me. I don't imagine, I mean, we're basically talking about two sides of the same coin, right?
Right.
You know, it's a spiritual program. You know, the sweat that you do is kind of the equivalent to the, you know, the Christian prayer process, the petitioning for, you know, you're asking for healing.
Right.
You know, and you're saying, I'm willing to do the work. I'm willing to endure this sweat, knowing that I'm doing it because I want things to be better on the other side.
Right.
I'm willing to give up some of these beliefs I have and move forward with something that's better.
Right.
Something that's healthy. And yeah, when you're talking about healing, the addiction is just the symptom. For me, the alcohol was just a symptom. And for me, life was just unsatisfactory. Yeah, I learned the drinking from my parents. I learned the drinking from them because life was unsatisfactory for them for right. whatever reason.
Right.
And I learned that when your life's unsatisfactory, you medicate.
Right. Right. You that know? Coping mechanism.
That's right. You deal with it by not dealing with it.
Right.
And, you know, to be able to go to people and, you know, it's funny you talk about the elders in the tribe. Same thing happens in AA. We've got a bunch of these old dudes.
Right. I noticed that. Yeah,
and older women who have been doing this for 30 years. And their lives ain't perfect, but they wake up in the morning and the first thing they think about is thanking God for another day, not unscrewing the top of the bottle mm-hmm. and taking a big gulp to chase off the jitters and, you know, that wanting to throw up feeling, you know? So yeah, it's, yeah, absolutely. It's, I mean, yeah, it's very similar. Like I said, two sides of the same coin, but you know, like we were talking in the break, you know, AA is not a one size fits all. Even in the book in AA, it says, you know, we're not the only path to recovery. Right. You know, different people have different spiritual programs that they want to pursue. If you're Irish and it's part of your culture to be a, you know, a member of the Catholic Church, there's answers there.
Right.
You know, if you're Nimiipuu, maybe the answer's in the sweat lodge.
Right.
Maybe it's spending time with the elders. I mean, you talked about, you know, going out and hunting and fishing. You're not out there to gather meat.
Right, right.
You're out there to spend time with those people and learn from them how the hell do I live a sober life?
Right, right. A traditional, and that, you know, that's that traditional life for them, for us is just, you know, in that process is very clean, is very healthy, is very, you know, like you're saying, is very healing. So it is, it's just, like you're saying, so for me, I couldn't step into an AA program, although I had been asked by, like you're saying, most of the time, individuals can get court-ordered into an AA meeting or an AA type of program.
Yeah.
But for me, it was just a lot easier to heal in my own way, you know, with my family. Like you're saying, sometimes instead of these AA programs or instead of, you know, a program inside a facility or from a state run, you know, sometimes it's easier or would be better for, you know, folks to go back to your traditions, get back with your family and get back to the, you know, the healing processes that we've been handed down for, you know, generations. So I think that, you know, it's always been my opinion that there should be some sort of program, you know, at least locally, that they can have assimilation of the both, you know, a 12-step program where they include sweat and include their, you know, include tradition. I think they have something similar, some sort of program like that in the Orofino prison because they've got a sweat lodge in there that they run for the inmates there. But it's always been an interest of mine to, you know, get involved that way too. So maybe a pathway that I go in the future.
Who knows? That may be why we're talking about it today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it would, you know, keep that in the back of your head. This may be God whispering in your ear right now. And wouldn't it be awesome to for you and I to meet up in 5 years and say, so how is that program you started
absolutely
down there working out, you know?
Absolutely. Well, Honey Watt normally smacks me in the face with the information I need, so I can understand that.
Yeah, I was sharing with a friend the other day. I was trying to come to a decision on something that's pretty important to me. You know how the hamster gets going on the wheel in your head and spinning and you just can't decide what, you know, this seems right, but this also seems right. And this seems wrong, but that's also wrong. And I just, when I get in that state, I just, I pray out loud. I go, God, I can't figure this out. I don't know what to do, you know.
Right.
Help me out. Help me out here. And then I just get quiet, you know, and just kind of let it be and have faith that an answer will come somehow. Not more than 2 minutes after that, my wife yells at me, come here, I need to talk to you. I go out there, and she lays out a three-step program to deal with the problem
right.
I was struggling with.
Right.
That was absolutely spot on. It was like, it never would have occurred to me to do this, this, and this
right.
to resolve it.
Right.
So does God answer prayers?
Oh, yeah,
yeah, but not always in the way that you expect him to, right?
Right.
And I use the word God just because it's simple. You know, it's that
oh, yeah.
power in the universe that's greater than me.
Right, know? Absolutely.
Two of us sitting here talking is a power greater than me.
Right, absolutely.
You know, I'm learning from you as you're sharing. And you know, hopefully it's vice versa. And that's when we talk about the WE program.
Like absolutely.
It's a WE program. You don't have to do this alone.
Absolutely. You know, I once had an elder, I'm not going to name names again, but once had an elder guy tell me to pray before I make a decision that's going to affect my life for more than 3 days. So that's something that I've always, I mean, it makes me stop and think anyway, even if it's not something that's going to affect my life for you know, more than 3 days, it makes me stop and think about it. But it puts that in my life, you know, all the time now and throughout the day and in everything, because literally like, you know, think about that. You're going to pray before a decision that's going to affect your life for more than 3 days. It's a lot of things, you know.
Yeah.
That includes the food that you eat, because that's affects you for more than 3 days, even though it may go through your body in one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the nutrients stay there for a long term. Right. So those are the things you look at when you're in that spiritual healing. So
right, exactly.
I think it's awesome to have that connection, you know, to be able to make that assimilation to the program, you know, the 12-step program as well.
I wish young people would do that before they took out credit cards.
Right, no joke.
Do I really want to get an Xbox and end up paying $5,000 for it after I pay off all the interest on this
right.
25% credit card?
Yeah, we could talk about the education system and then implementing that as well.
Right, exactly. I've been lobbying for that for years, and I've
exactly
because yeah, I like. I'd say a lot of people, not necessarily most, but I think a lot of people whip that card out, man, money's right there. It's easy. You can satisfy your impulses
right.
on a dime and man, you know, that bill starts growing and pretty soon you're standing in front of a judge going, I can't pay my bills.
Right. No joke.
So,
no joke.
But yeah, but I mean, you know, just so many things that's, I'm going to remember that, you know. Pray on anything that's going to affect your life for more than 3 days.
Yeah, it's a good way to look at things.
That's awesome.
It's definitely changed my life. So,
fantastic. Well, hey, you know what? We're up against the clock here, Shane, but I want to thank you so much for spending some time with us today and telling your story. It's
Heck
pretty
yeah.
awesome.
I appreciate being on and look forward to coming back and talking to you about that program in the future.
There you go. We'll keep in touch, I promise.
Awesome.
So I'll close it with the usual, and then we'll back out of here with a little more of Shane's music. If you think you have a problem with drugs or alcohol or behavioral health disorders, you do.
Hand me that lighter, man. I'm a bonus sweet guys. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, man. Chip. Diz Dean. Love you, mama.
I took mom's Bible out, and I burned sweet grass, and I cried today for the ones who come and the ones who pass. I took mom's Bible out, and I burned sweet grass, and I cried today for the ones who come and the ones who pass.
It's been a short while and I'm sure we'll rebound, but I still see your face as I wander town. And I knew less then I know now, but I seem way more lost in today somehow. And I'm in and out and I look around and I know you're not there, but your absence hangs on looming darkness as it forms above me a great big cloud. And I've been trying to fight back, I'm kicking and I'm screaming,
Let me get through this and escape all of these demons. I keep running and running and running, but they keep reaching. So we keep gunning, I'm dumping, and these spirits do nothing but my heart stay steady beating.
I took mom's Bible out, and I burned sweet grass, and I cried today for the ones who've come and the ones who passed. I took mom's Bible out, and I burned sweet grass, and I cried today for the ones who've come and the ones who passed. For the old ones and the young ones too, that know nothing else except to hold on to. For the things we've been through, cliffhangers, to do, life's full of dangers. I took mom's Bible out, and I burned sweet grass. Yeah, I burned sweet grass. I took mom's Bible out.